This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Since September 11th, 2001, the idea of the U.S. as the homeland has changed the way we think about this country compared to the rest of the world. The Department of Homeland Security, established in the wake of the terrorist attacks, has now become a part of society that we take for granted. But astonishingly, DHS has also begun to creep into the educational curricula of U.S. public schools. Writing about how one school in particular has become infected with the language and ideology of homeland security is my guest, Nicole Nguyen. In her new book, A Curriculum of Fear, Homeland Security and U.S. Public Schools, she asks, quote, what investments and social structures made a discussion about terrorism and national security in a U.S. public high school not only possible, but frighteningly normalized? The high school in question is a D.C. area facility located next to a military base that she names Milton High School. Today, there are more than a dozen U.S. high schools nationwide that have formalized programs focusing on homeland security. Nicole Nguyen is an assistant professor of social foundations of education at the University of Illinois Chicago, and she joins me to discuss her book, A Curriculum of Fear, Homeland Security and U.S. Public Schools. Welcome to the program, Nicole.
Great, thanks for having me.
So I understand that you started doing the research in this school, that's the basis of your book, while you were a graduate student. You were focusing on this and studying this whole idea of how homeland security is intersecting with our schools for your dissertation?
Yes, that's correct.
And how did that whole thing start? How did you stumble upon or even find out that there was a formalized program that is being taught to high school students in this particular school? How did your journey begin?
It's actually, I found it by accident. So I had always been interested in the relationship between conflict and education, how education can mitigate or exacerbate or sometimes both conflict and war. And I had been doing a Google search on an entirely different topic, and I write about this in the book, and I just stumbled across another school with a Homeland Security program. And I was wondering how, as someone who's so deeply immersed in public school reform and literature on militarization and the global war on terror, how did I have no idea that these kinds of Homeland Security programs in high schools existed? And the more people I talked to, the more they were also perplexed and had no idea about these new institutional arrangements between the national security state and high schools. And based on that, I thought, you know, this is a story that needs telling. And so I contacted Milton High School, another high school that I came across, and they welcomed me to the school. They wanted to show how great their educational programming was to increase graduation rates, reduce the achievement gap, and the like. So that's really, it was really just stumbling into this high school. No knowledge of these kinds of arrangements.
Now, we know that there has been military recruitment happening in our schools for years, where the Army or the Navy go into schools quite openly and directly talk to students about enrolling after they graduate. This has been a longstanding practice. But Homeland Security is something different. And what you write about with this curriculum is something different. First of all, even before we get into how it's taught in schools, I think it's worth re-establishing for ourselves. We take for granted this notion of the Department of Homeland Security. What exactly does DHS do? And understanding that, you know, it, I think, sets the groundwork for how we see what they're teaching in school. So how do you explain to the layperson, in a nutshell, what does DHS actually do?
So I would say that it's the Department of Homeland Security, but also a range of federal agencies and private contractors. So when we're talking about Homeland Security, it's the department in particular, but it's also the FBI, the National Security Agency, people who build and make weapons and surveillance equipment. So DHS is really charged with domestic security, defending the homeland through a range of different methods, whether that's surveillance, spying, intelligence gathering, law enforcement and the prosecution of potential terrorists, of foreign extremists, and of course the pursuit of those folks both at home and abroad. So the task is really this broad sort of liberal notion of defending the homeland. So the school becomes an extension of that charge to protect the land from outside threats, internal threats.
Right. So let's then talk about this particular curriculum. I mean, it's one thing to have a school that might be located next to a military base, be kind of influenced by military culture. It's another thing to actually have a formal curriculum in the school that you call Milton High School. How exactly did this program, where students can what take a class in Homeland Security, how does it manifest on campus? Is it that they take classes just as they would take a history or a geography class?
So it's a program. So students who are interested in homeland security or national security choose to participate in the program. They get a parental signature, and it's like enrolling in any kind of educational program at a high school. They take a series of specialized homeland security classes, Homeland Security 1 and 2. They can choose from a variety of different national security related electives, and there's a whole host of field trips to national security hubs, state police training, Northrop Grumman, a defense contractor. They visited their facilities. They went to test out biometric devices. So there's field trips. They have guest speakers, national security agency experts, Department of Homeland Security high level officials, and as well as internships. So it's really a comprehensive education. It's not just a class here or there, which is what I expected, but it's a full sort of wraparound program from classes to field trips to guest speakers to internships that students are immersed in from day one.
So essentially, the goal is to get a crop of students, a generation of students interested, so that Homeland Security, the Department of Homeland Security, but also all of these various sort of satellite agencies and companies have a crop of students who, upon graduation, are seen as potential employees.
Yes, and it's slightly complicated. So this was a high school serving predominantly poor and working class youth of color. And so there were a variety of different goals, different levels of goals. So the stated mission was essentially to improve the school, which had sort of a notorious reputation that might produce some future national security workers who might work for the National Security Agency, the Department of Homeland Security, and the like. But it was also about low-level jobs, so Border Patrol agents, TSA agents, essentially what they were calling the wand people. They would say that the NSA operates as a small city, so they needed people with security clearances who are custodians, who are caretakers. And so it was a variety of different jobs that students were vying for, but it was also at the same time, maybe kids aren't going to go into the national security industry, but they're thinking about national security, and they think that these techniques and tactics of securing the homeland through military war surveillance are acceptable and lauded. So it's about jobs, but it's also about this sort of more ideological project.
How did that ideological project manifest in the classroom? You describe a teacher that you call Ms. Perez, who basically is teaching as part of this program to schools. What was it like to be in that classroom? What was the interaction between students and the teacher?
Sure, and again, it's complicated because I was participating, I was going on field trips, I was sitting in on classes, and one of the things that Ms. Perez did in the classroom was she was identifying national security threats. So, people could hack, this infrastructure, or they could bomb this infrastructure, and here's how federal, state, local officials respond to these threats. But students are also practicing these procedures. So, if we're at the State Police Academy, we're running around with police training guns, running through different simulations of actor shooter drills or home intruder drills, and the like. So even for me, who ends up being very critical of the program, I was also very swept away by the energy because students were engaged, they were asking questions, they were enthusiastic. And so sort of that tactile immersion into thinking about national security, the fears around potential terrorist attack on their school or their community, and then the procedures used to respond to those threats, it became hard for me to see that this was problematic. And so even though I had questions about it, I was myself certainly bound up in the same logics at the school.
I mean, then would you say that the kind of atmosphere and framework created within the schools is tantamount to a sort of low-level propaganda and brainwashing?
I would certainly associate it with that. There certainly was a certain political and ideological goal of the program, whether it was overtly understood by the teachers, but it was certainly sowing the seeds of fear of the Middle East, of Al-Qaeda, of homegrown terrorists who might be Muslim. So there certainly was this ideological bent to it that foreclosed any other ways of thinking about political violence, terrorism, and the role of war and all of that. So it certainly functioned in that way.
Right, and of course we should mention that schools have always been places where patriotism in the traditional sense is encouraged. There's always US flags. Kids are expected to, you know, read or recite the Pledge of Allegiance. And, you know, at that level of sort of nationalism and conformity to nationalism is expected, but it sounds like this is going far beyond that and inculcating students in the prevailing ideology of why it's necessary for the U.S. to be at war and to be constantly on alert. How did you present yourself to the school? Now, you write about this in your book, and you just mentioned that you were going on field trips, etc. Did they know what you were there to research and do?
Yes. So when I originally approached this school, at the time I was really interested in the program as a school reform effort, because the program was publicized as sort of this vo-tech of the 21st century. It's a way to turn around struggling schools. So I wasn't expecting this comprehensive program with all of these classes and field trips. So when I approached the school, I sort of said, I'm interested in a Homeland Security program as a school reform effort. I'm interested in how the national security focus shapes curriculum and culture. And I sat down with teachers and said, you know, this is my research project. Here are the things I'm thinking about. Here's what participation in this research project would involve. People were consented to participate in the study following institutional review board policies. So they were quite aware of the fact that this was research. I didn't always talk about my intellectual politics. This came up sometimes. My questions about the role of fear or the sort of celebration of military incursions. But by and large, I sort of kept my opinions and my orientations to myself. Only on small occasions did I reveal this. So I can imagine some participants reading this book, maybe some are surprised by the findings, others less so surprised, depending on my relationship with the participant.
So how common are such programs becoming? This particular program that you said, you know, students can enroll in, they can get parental permission and actually take essentially a formal curriculum in it. Is it just this one school? You've written about how that there's something like 15 schools now that have such programs. Is this a trend that we expect to start seeing in more and more schools?
So it's a trend in the sense that, yes, there are over a dozen and growing formalized Homeland Security programs. But I think one of the major takeaways from my research is that there are different kinds of institutional arrangements between national security and schools. So they're not all going to look like this specialized Homeland Security high school. There are a growing number of these types of high schools, but you also have a growing number of spy camps for kids hosted by the NSA.
Spy camps for kids?
Spy camps for kids, yes.
Hosted by the NSA.
Administered by the NSA. They have a Crypto Kids. They have like a coloring book. They have a website designed for children to get them thinking about national security very early on. That was the case at Milton. Milton was trying to think about how do we infuse national security beginning in kindergarten to create what they called a kindergarten to career pipeline to the national security industry. The American Federation of Teachers last week issued a statement to the FBI regarding an online learning module for teachers and students and their parents on essentially identifying people who might be on the road to violent extremism. And so they're essentially saying you're asking teachers to be spies and to survey and to profile young people in the classroom. So there are, you know, 15 or 20 of these specialized Homeland Security programs, but there's a vast range of ways the national security industry is infiltrating schools and young people's spaces.
I want to turn back to your specific experience and research within Milton High School. How did you view gender and race as it, and the kind of culture of white supremacy and masculinity that manifested within the classroom in this program? Because we know that, for example, the military is a very masculinized, institution. Did you see those frames and lenses, within the classroom as well?
Yes, there was a lot of male bravado, a lot of masculinist jokes, just sort of that masculinist patriarchal culture that was really evoked. I remember at the State Police Academy, there was students had just eaten at the end of the day, and there was this very hard obstacle course that students wanted to compete in against each other to try to get the fastest time. And at the end, there's just a pile of students who are sick to their stomachs at the end, but wanting to keep pursuing getting the best time. And so that's sort of the male bravado in the classroom and on field trips of sort of, that be all you can be sort of militarized sort of sentiment that was infused through the classroom. It was a lot of war, aggression, sort of this just brute force sort of sentiment that was infused throughout the curriculum, whether teachers knew it or not. There was a lot of objectifying of girls throughout the time, and boys really articulating these warrior dreams, these desires to become warriors who would advance the global war on terror, who would advance national security. And so that certainly was an organizing theme of the Homeland Security program that was in the classroom, that was in the curriculum, it was in field trips. There was a Department of Homeland Security official was giving a presentation, and she said something like, there's just something about a man with a gun. So ultimate masculinity here is typified by a man wielding a gun. And so these are just the small ways that this sense of masculinity was driven into the program.
So romanticizing war, romanticizing violence. But the flip side of that, of course, is fear. The name of your book is Curriculum of Fear. How much sort of the fear of the other was manifested within these classrooms through this curriculum? And how did that fit within the fact that, as you mentioned, a lot of these were kids of color who are often seen as other within our society themselves?
Yes, it's quite a project to convince kids of color to fear other kids of color in their own community. And I think this is one of the most brilliant aspects of the program. And it sort of walked this contradiction. And I talk about this in the book, where you have kids who will say, I understand that our understanding of a terrorist is really racist and based on stereotypes. And we don't do that here. We acknowledge that anyone in the world could be a terrorist. Anyone can commit acts of terrorism. And this was really something that every student communicated to me in some kind of way. Anyone can be a terrorist. Anyone can be a terrorist. We don't stereotype. And yet, in the day-to-day classroom, they're talking about kids in Afghanistan who are back in the Stone Ages, who've been at war with each other since they've been children and know no other life. They're talking about how Al-Qaeda hates the United States. And so they're certainly provoking particular fears around a racialized other while believing and articulating that they're not doing that very thing. And so this is one way that kids of color learn to police other kids of color, through the continued articulation and repetition that this is not what we're doing. We're using objective methods, statistics to assess and measure who is a terrorist and where the threats are and how to respond to those threats.
Now, Nicole, of course, the most disturbing aspect of all of this is that we're talking about kids here. Kids who are obviously easily influenced, still forming their opinions about the world, don't have enough experience to properly judge or assess what somebody is telling them. And as you said, you yourself felt yourself getting caught up in some of the language and culture of Homeland Security. Did you feel that these kids were really, I mean, this is a public school, what are we subjecting children to through our tax dollars to become, to grow up, to become adults that romanticize violence and fear the other?
I, you know, for a lot of times when people come up to me to talk about this book, they'll say, well, what are the other alternatives? And I think there is something about the race and class of students that has made it okay for this subsection of the population to receive this kind of education as children, to be continually exposed to this kind of violence, to glorify this kind of violence. When the teachers I worked with said they would never have their own children participate in this program because they were worried that their children would be exposed to violence, that they would always be afraid of people. So I think one of the things that I'm asking through the book is, how is it that we've said this kind of educational pathway is okay for poor and working class youth of color, but not for white, wealthy, young people who are also coming up in the world and learning about the world and their place in it. So I think that's another major takeaway. And when people ask me, well, what else can we do to engage students to increase academic achievement? You know, my response is come up with a variety of different ways that aren't embedded in the military, in war, in national
security. I mean, education is about critical thinking. Education is about learning how to learn. It's about exploration rather than propaganda and brainwashing. I mean, there's so many alternatives to a curriculum in Homeland Security.
Yes. And, you know, I think the school would argue that they are teaching their students critical thinking skills. They are teaching, you know, their students all of these things that we value in a sort of liberal democracy. But when it's arced, it's always arced through or filtered through this national security lens, you're going to always get something that's a little bit concerning and problematic. And so the question, you know, this larger question I think that you open with is really, how did we arrive at this moment that this is so normalized that most of us aren't even aware that these high school programs exist, or we're not troubled by them? Or how is it that a very well-intended teacher sat down at a table trying to think of how do we improve this failing school or struggling school? And this is what they came up with as the best alternative. And so that's really what the book is about.
And so then how does, you mentioned that there's a teachers union that is opposing these kinds of militarization and homeland security programs in schools. What can the public do about this? Because these are public schools. Are parents involved? Is there any kind of outcry at either at Milton School or some of the other schools where these programs are being established from teachers and from parents?
So in terms of the formalized Homeland Security program, so at Milton, there was no outrage. There was no outcry from parents, from students, or from teachers, just because this was seen as something that is good for the community, which I think is a common refrain. This is good for this set of children. So for me, a lot of this, but there is resistance. So you'll see resistance in Boston, in Los Angeles, Minneapolis, to the growing relationship between national security and schools. And so, you know, for me, I think part of this is learning what's going on in our public schools, being involved in school boards and things like that, and sort of paying particular attention to what kinds of arrangements are being made. Are engineering programs in your high school being funded by the NSA or by defense contractors? So to really not only understand what's going on and to know what's going on, but then to sort of take action, whether that's petitioning, whether that's, you know, public outcry, you know, some sort of organized resistance in the form of protest or what have you. But there are a range of actions people can take. But the first step, I think, is knowing what's going on in the community. And
your book has clearly achieved that. That has helped people draw attention to that issue. I'm guessing that there's not that much research or writing on this on these sorts of programs so far, besides your book.
Yes, as far as I know, there's nothing that looks specifically at these types of programs. So public awareness is, I think, one of the biggest keys to really preventing and overturning these kinds of programs.
Well, Nicole, I want to wish you the best of luck with your book. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Great, thanks so much for having me.
Nicole Nguyen is an assistant professor of social foundations of education at the University of Illinois, Chicago. We've been discussing her new book, A Curriculum of Fear, Homeland Security and U.S. Public Schools. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.